nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
So we were talking about, we're discussing different ways to graphically represent the properties of our battery materials, and for the lithium systems, the different lithium systems, we were plotting the potential as a function of charge capacity. And as we were doing that, one of the first things we found out was that the capacity of the material systems that people are using does not match the capacity of the anode materials that people are using. In fact, the best of all the materials, you can see there's at least an order of magnitude from the pure lithium reference with respect to the cathode materials. So there are ways, of course, to compensate for this, okay? And typically what people do is as we were discussing, right, we play with the thicknesses of the different layers. We also play with things like the porosity. And given that in this case the charge capacity, the ideal charge capacity, is directly related to the solubility limits, or how much we can store in a per unit volume basis in our system. Okay? And ideally, we want that with respect to the pure lithium reference, the anode materials that we pick have the lowest possible potential, as negative as we could find, while the cathode materials, we want to find them as high as possible if what you're aiming for is for a high voltage, high energy density system. Okay? At the most fundamental level, that's what we want. Okay? Then we started writing, relationships. We wrote relationships based on this. More specifically, we do have the lighting. More specifically, we started trying to ground it a little bit and define the energy density as the integral of the current that we're extracting from our battery times, in this case, the voltage. That also the voltage difference between cathode and anode integrated over time between the initial instant to the final instant. Okay. And of course, and maybe I should write it like this. This would be divided by the total mass of the battery. This corresponds to basically all the contributions. Active, inactive, everything, right? Packaging, anything you use to preserve the safety, the electronics, everything is included here when you're making your design. Anything, and that's why not only you engineer the chemistry, you engineer everything around it, okay, for both safety and energy density. And, of course, this doesn't have... this should have actually the right units, okay, as we were defining the energy density. So, and, well, we did other things, right? We actually defined another relationship. So I'm going to here make the assumption that if the current is constant and if the voltage drop is constant until it reaches the discharge time, okay, then I can rewrite that energy density. Right, so these both are constants. Basically, I get the current times dt. Okay, well, basically that's a constant too. Right, times the voltage drop divided by the mass. And, well, basically this number over here gives me the amount of charge that I get from the battery. So I can say, this is the charge that is exchanged between the anode and the cathode. Okay, it's not necessarily the charge that ideally one material itself can withstand. Yes, and it would be the same when the capacity ratio, as we discussed it, is one. Although in practice we know it's not necessarily one. So really, what we're aiming for here is the minimum between the charge that I can actually store in my anode and the charge that I can store in my cathode. times, of course, the voltage drop between both electrodes divided by the mass, right? And we discussed this, so I'm not going to elaborate on this, but you know that there are equations here associated to the thickness of the electrode, to the porosity, and to all these other things that go into it, okay? And you can plug them in there and get effectively the energy density of a porous electrode, okay? Now, that's on that end, and I'm going to, let's just draw a line here. I can also extract the average power of the battery, right? We know, and actually we wrote that too, the instantaneous power is basically the current times the voltage drop, right? This is a current that may vary in time and a voltage that is may be varying in time, okay? And of course, the instantaneous power density would also be divided by the mass, okay? But what we care about ultimately is how much of that power actually we use throughout the entire use of a full discharge, from having a full charge battery to a fully discharged battery, right? So if we do that, then we want to integrate the actual instantaneous power still from the initial instance to the discharge time. Okay, same in this case, integral. Okay, of course divided by the mass. Okay, but now since I want this quantity to have the units of time, I'm sorry, of energy per unit time, then I have to divide by TF minus T naught, basically the range and which I actually was able to use the battery. Basically, I average out all the peaks as it goes across, right? And I care about the integrated, the weighted area under the curve, right? In this voltage capacity, a time dependent plot. Okay. And, we care about both, right? The more we ideally would want this difference, okay, to last for a long time, but I want this number to be large. Okay? So the last quantity, the last measure to quantify the performance of a battery, it's basically comparing the average power versus the average energy. And that's what, I'll show you that on the next slide. Okay, but here what we have is in this axis we have the energy, okay? And in that axis we have the power, okay, in as in density. In this case, this goes as watt hours per kilogram. And this one goes as units as watts per kilogram. Okay, this is one measure, and this is on a per weight basis. Alternative ways to plotting this are referred to as in watts per volume. Okay, sometimes they do it in a per liter basis, or if you prefer here, watt hours per volume. Okay, you can, people care about per kilogram or per volume depending on the application. In some cases you care whether or not this thing is heavy or not. In some cases you care about how much space it occupies. So they use both of them, okay? And ideally, if we start ignoring the porosity issues, basically what we have here, the intersection of the with the horizontal axis, the energy axis, basically corresponds to the area spanned by the voltage difference and the minimum charge that can be exchanged, as we were describing in the slides above, okay? But what is the most interesting is that as we, and we also discussed this a little bit last class, as we extract more and more energy, ideally, we will get close to what we expect ideally, right? Basically, here we will have close to equilibrium response. And as we extract more and more energy per unit second, we deviate from that ideal. So the response, basically, we start getting more power at the expense of getting less energy. Basically, these deviations correspond to losses and the non-idealities in the battery, right? So here would be, for example, one point here would correspond to a battery that discharges say in 10 hours. Okay? And this point over here would be the same battery, say discharging in 1 hour. Okay? And a point over here could be a battery that discharges in 30 minutes. You can see the faster I get the charge out, I am getting less energy, but I'm getting more power. Okay? This plot is referred to, and I'm going to name it, put the name here, is referred to as a Ragone plot. And it's a very nice space to benchmark different battery technologies. That's how you will find it. Okay, and I'm just going to jump to that slide. And where did that go? Okay. Here you go. Okay. Okay. That's a sketch of different technologies. Okay. And what I find interesting is the historical sequence on battery technology. You can see here in this orangey color the lead acid technology, right? Notice that the amount of energy per mass is relatively low as compared to the other technologies. There was a jump, keeping basically the energy the same. There was a jump in power density simply by packaging it in one way to go to spirally wound electrodes, which we haven't discussed. Okay. Then people in the late 80s, early 90s started using the nickel cadmium technology. Notice that we basically doubled the energy density, and we also gained something in power density. Not much, but there's still some gains there. Okay. Then there was, of course, the introduction of the nickel metal hydride. Right. Notice again another factor of two improvement, and just from changing the chemistry. We didn't gain much on power, but we actually have a huge improvement on how much energy we can put in this thing. Okay, here to the right, almost two-thirds away from it, is the sodium nickel dichloride. Actually, this technology is actually not new. It was actually discovered during World War II, in, if I remember correctly, in South Africa. Okay. This battery, this rechargeable battery that actually works based on sodium ions, the advantage of that technology is that it's very stable as you cycle it back and forth. The only disadvantage is that it has to go in the order of 100, say, I think it's 300 degrees C in order to run it, so it's not something you would use at room temperature. It was abandoned for many years, and then people came back for to look at it very recently. Well, I think we're going to spend a lecture on that. The lithium metal polymer and the lithium ion battery, you can see the high energy density materials. Notice that with respect to nickel metal hydride, there's another factor of two jump in energy density. Okay. I mean, during the mid-90s, early 90s, and early 2000s, there was a huge jump on that, and you can see how we have gone a long way from the lead acid technology in that sense to the lithium and lithium ion battery technology. It's a huge improvement. But notice what happens, right? That if, just like I was describing there on the board, if I increase, extracting more current out of my system, I will get more power, but I will start losing in energy. In fact, I can lose all the way to half of it, depending how fast I can extract the charge out of that battery. And the reason there's other three domains here, one referring to the lithium ion high power and lithium ion very high power, the only reason those are described separately instead of one giant stripe that goes across the board is because people don't design a battery for all the applications. High energy density applications corresponds to one regime, and if you want to make a battery for a high energy, high power density application, then you use the same chemistry or maybe a different chemistry, but you package it differently, so you're limited, you have less energy density overall, but you can access it much more easier. So that's why each of these corresponds to different ways to making them or to package them. It is related to the porosity and the particle size and, of course, the chemistry. But think of it as how, to this point, the battery technology has evolved to the point that it has really left behind, notice that this is a log-log plot, by decades, what we currently had in, what we had previously with respect to technology. Okay? So to this point, I have talked about basically the basic elements as to how people have benchmarked and have made energy material selection just for energy and charge applications. And now we're going to dive in the next part on how the basic science relates to how these numbers, where these numbers come from. Okay? So if you have any questions on this part, I think this is a good time to ask that. If not, of course, I'm happy to answer them as we go along. Any questions? Okay.